April 20, 2021, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. from Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. Started off with John Coltrane doing an alternate version of Train Sonic.
Stellar Reasons.
And then Junk Drawer after that with What I've Learned, What I'm Learning. In fact, I just got a buttload of lessons off air right now with our guests. I'm not, Brother Matt's on the Love Grotto, Pleasure Point, come out south, because still quite quarantino mode, but I'm not man alone. Those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention makes it possible for me to be with Brother Stevie Lennox. Welcome aboard, Stevie.
Nice to be here, Mike. Thanks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Greetings from Belfast.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about your journey through music. Okay. Your earliest musical recollection, Stevie, please bring.
Ooh, earliest. I grew up in Northern Ireland has a bit of an Ireland in general, especially in the rural areas, has a massive country thing, and it really stretches back. I'm glad that I was brought up with, like, the outlaw stuff and the sort of, at least, the stuff that had the rock and roll, a vague rock and roll edge to it, and that sort of aroma of... of herbal smoke. And so the earliest stuff I would have heard would have been like your Jerry Reed and Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, stuff like that. But it wasn't really until I was handed a couple of records and Dad said, two rock and roll records you need to hear in your life.
Okay.
And he hands me Paranoid by Sabbath and Led Zeppelin 4. And that sent me on a fairly decent pathway. And I'm trying to think.
Well, let me ask you, this pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
There were musical instruments. My mum, not at all, but my dad and all of his sisters, like, some of the earliest things I remember hearing were, like, my aunt singing Helplessly Hoping by CSNY, and there's something that, like, you know, I can still hear that harmony, and you can hear you're sort of back looking up from the cot. So a lot of Neil Young coming up from there. Dad played for years, just doing covers, you know, Stratocasters around the house all the time. And I think he always sort of hoped that me and my brother, who plays in Junk Drawer as well, would probably take it up at some stage. And the guitar would always be left suggestively, like, sort of nearby. But I don't think it was really until I started hearing stuff around 13, 14 before I started picking it up of my own volition. And I think that's kind of why, you know, try to approach it.
Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the school band, marching band or shit like that, if they had it?
Yeah, I didn't play music technically at school, but I did sing. To be honest, I never even thought about forming a band until... It's funny you should ask that, yeah. And I never even think about it myself, but a music teacher just sort of... They always like to have an alternate, you know, a rock thing just for their variety show at the end of the year, and me being the one guy was sort of... you know, hair longer than the length of your thumb in the class. They said, Stevie, would you fancy maybe playing a Jerry Lee Lewis song or something? So, yeah, sure enough, we did Great Balls of Fire. I think that was probably the first taste I ever got of an audience. Probably still one of the most receptive ones of that.
So the first time you played in front of somebody.
It was, yeah. Certainly singing, you know, solo.
I
sang in the choir for like a little while, but to be honest, it started just because we needed like the extra points to make it for university.
Okay.
Graduated. And it kind of just set me down.
What about the first record you bought with your own money?
It's shameful. It was The Darkness, Permission to Land. I think I was very much a hard rock kid.
The Darkness.
Early on.
Now, Stooges got to play with The Darkness in Spain. And they were, I mean, this was the, you know, obviously the 2000s, but they're kind of like a 70s. He reminded me of Peter Frampton, the front man.
Very much, yeah, very much that open, low-waisted V-neck.
Pete Frampton now lives in Nashville. He married a U.S. lady. But I really liked him in Humble Pie. Great. But Steve Marriott, incredible singer, man. Oh, my God.
Great
Robert
stuff.
Plant, you said something about Led Zeppelin, but Robert Plant says he owes a lot to Steve Marriott. Little man, but what a voice.
Yeah, I was actually just chatting about that the other night. House parties are sort of able to happen again now, and we were just chatting about how it would have turned out if Steve Marriott had actually joined Zeppelin. I mean, man, can you imagine?
I don't know if he'd get along too much with Jimmy Page, but but that voice, you know, especially those days, the best PAs in the world are the venues, terrible acoustics. And he could cut through, man. I tell you, that voice. Beautiful. Beautiful.
That's it. Every time I hear about a show back in the day, I keep thinking, wow, how romantic it must be. But were the sound systems awful back then?
Terrible. That's why you see the pictures with all them amps on the stage.
Because yeah, they only used the PA.
Yeah, the PA was only for the voice. I mean, these places were built for fucking hockey and, you know, basketball and shit. It's really bad, especially bass. Oh, my God, it was just some fucking rumble thing. And you'd see eight SVTs on the stage, you know. Drummers playing with no monitor. You see pictures of Mitch Mitchell playing with Jimmy and no fucking monitors. Anyway.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's why, my heart bleeds pink lemonade when I hear people whining. Man, those guys, they really had to work it. What was the first gig you went and saw, Stevie?
The first gig was, let me think. Now, the very first one, going back to early in the youth, was Emmylou Harris and the Hot Band.
Yeah, sure.
And she had Rodney Crowell and Albert Lee on guitar.
Sure, yeah.
The rest, but it was like third row, and it was probably the first sense of live music I ever had. It was a really important formative show, and you know, you have your teenage phase where you really go off country and stuff, but it definitely, coming back to it and getting a little bit older, it's such good shit.
Well, you know, in the long run, ain't music music?
Uh-huh.
Genres kind of like we were discussing off air, are like borders and shit. It gets in the way.
it does, and I think you reach a peace with it as the years go on and realize it.
I do too. It was a big problem. Like, I couldn't see a band without my mind involuntarily trying to search for what do they sound like? Why not just let that fucking go and let them play?
Yeah, exactly. I remember, even early on, I remember chatting to, you know, Damo Suzuki from Cannes.
Sure, great
singer, man. Yeah, amazing. And I remember talking to him. I was like, what sort of vibe do you want them to play tonight? You know, like, me thinking they'd be playing some sort of, you know, support band, crowdy stuff or whatever. He's like, there is no genre. It doesn't matter. It's a construct.
That's beautiful.
Of course it is.
You know, I've been helping this guy, Mike Baghetta, with this MSSV band, and he calls his music post-genre.
I've seen that pop up more and more, and, like, I know people that make electronic music, but, you know, I also hear the spirit of, like, black metal and dance and everything in there. It's
Yeah, why not?
Getting that point, it's really interesting to hear.
Right, like Chow, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
More the merrier. Bring it. It's all vocabulary.
Exactly.
What about after school? Not graduating, but in the afternoon. Did you do the basement? Well, obviously, you had your brother. So did you? And you're playing with them now. So you guys had bands during school, right?
Yeah. We played some. Yeah, and it was sort of indie covers. I was going through taking myself very seriously. Pearl Jam and grunge phase, which is all very formative and like just getting into Nirvana. And that opening the floodgates then to hear stuff like, you know, Minutemen and Meat Puppets and so on. So it was just right in the cusp of that, just before I burrowed a bit deeper.
So you're trying to learn songs off the records? That's what me and Dee Boone did.
Yeah, now, that's
but,
it.
But at the same time, were you trying to write your own stuff too?
Yeah, it just gradually seeped in that, you know, we played a couple of shows. First couple of shows maybe had no... Like all covers, you know, and you're just playing that, and that's good enough for you. And you start talking to the older guys, and they're like, you know, you guys are tight. You should really start thinking about writing your own stuff.
No, that happened to us. Me and D Boom were jammed with our friend, I think, trying to get Try Your Mother Down or some shit, Queen. And this guy, it turned out to be the drummer of the Weirdos. He said, you know, there's a scene up in Hollywood where people write their own songs. And, like, I know that sounds incredibly stupid, but we had never heard of something like that. We thought only the rock guys from Olympus would come down to deliver the good time. But because there was no culture for it. You know what I mean? When you don't know, it's a choice.
That's it. Even the other local bands our age just didn't write their own songs. Yeah. It just seemed like this thing of guys, you know, you hit 21 or 25 and the songs happen to those guys.
But not you. Okay. And then it wasn't even the idea of reinterpreting it. It was more like building models. Kind of looks like the real thing, but it ain't, you know.
slightly bent, still be sent to target of the crowded. You're too long, eliminate one, would it miss and be gone? And collaborate no longer with collaborators as well as itself.
Thank you. sin barquito, todo fugido. Você caminharia nas minhas tábuas. Eu não quero quebrar. Tem o cheiro de um hálito de bêbado que fala no sotaque dos peritos do meu bairro.
Watch for Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off Junk Drawer, doing Temporary Day. And Guided by Voices from their new album, which comes every 3 months. Talk about writing your own songs. I mean, Bob Pollard, Jesus. How can a plum be perfected? Yeah. Question mark, huh? Should be a question mark. Trypto Phantom from Bombus Prennan after that. Wharton's Expanding Jazz Band, Philosophical. Wharton Tears, incredible cat. Studio man, but also great drummer man. And this is him playing with his friends, like Thurston and Glenn Branca. Manlio Maresca, he's in Berlin now. Incredible guitar man from Terracina, Italy. King of Dirtiness. Well, him in a... he's using a strap now on his guitar. For a long time, right, he'd get a chair and just hike his leg up there. He wouldn't use a strap. But this is him with a fucking rhythm box. Like, right? Like the way somebody used their foot on a stomp box. But he's trading, hitting the strings with hitting the buttons. Irmo, and then some stuff from Italy. Irmo Victor. Reflexos Navais. This is from a label, Bari, way in the south, the heel part. You can get there by lepers.it, L-E-P-E-R-S-D-I-T. Like 50 albums there for free, people. It's great music. El Cloro after that, Rupert, the Ice Cream Man, and then Alexander DeLarge with the Animal Kingdom would probably cease to exist without Smegma. You know Smegma, right? Actually, it's the name of a band. They're in Portland now. Really wild stuff. Richard Meltzer for a while was playing with them. It was like somebody turned on the tape recorder with the TV. Well, several TVs on real loud for 45 minutes. They used to be part of the L.A. Free. In fact, they started the L.A. Free Music Society. Interesting. And then finally, Year of the Sofa, Junk Drawer. So... does Junk Drawer go way back? Is that one of your first bands?
No, actually. Junk Drawer was one of those things that seemed like myself and my brother hadn't really played in a few years. And I'm trying to think, I was around 25 when it started. I'm 30 now. But it was myself and my pal Brian Coney. And he and I, you know, we wrote about the same stuff. We sort of knew each other from distant circles. You know, oh, Brian, you know, he's a big guy, the Slint and My Bloody Valentine and all the sort of, you know, when you're starting to burrow beneath the surface a bit more, the musical subculture thing. And we sort of eventually were just like, we should probably form a band, shouldn't we? Because no one else in Belfast is really digging this stuff that we know. So a few bedroom practices and we think, here's some ideas. I haven't played with Jake in a while. He plays everything, but we need a drummer. Drummers are, you know, worth their weight in gold. So let's get him in. We had some practices. We actually played with a guy called, who is the brother actually of one of the guys from, if you know Idols.
Sure.
So funny enough, they're one of their guitarists from here and his brother played with us for a while before pursuing a career in dentistry. So, you know, can't resent the guy. And we got another buddy, Rory D, and that solidified the final lineup. At some point, we all just realized that we'd be a lot more comfortable playing different instruments, you know, just keeping it as fluid as possible. Like Temporary Day that you played there, was that sort of what happens if we don't have a drummer and try to start, you know, just exploring with beats and exploring everything else after some, you know, psychedelic times. And just why are we limiting ourselves to guitar music? You know, we're going very, very much into the Dinosaur Jr. Built to Spill thing for a while, for lack of a better term. And we thought, might this not be interesting with some extra textures? So that pretty much brought us up to the album period then.
And then, so, if, you know, the idea is not to be on your regular thing, why didn't you get on the fucking drums?
Well, I do play drums on a couple of different things, but I'm not the competent drummer that he is.
I was just trying to carry that idea out to his logical conclusion, you know. So, and then Well, what about the gigs? The gigs you guys switch off, or do you stay on your regular stuff?
We do switch around. I think it took a couple of years of testing things out and, you know, being told by local journalists or being hearing from that local journalists had complained that it wasn't conducive to the vibe. But I think we hit a point of just, I think playing outside of your own city, I'm sure you know yourself, playing outside your own city to audiences you don't know any of the faces of, frees things up a bit to the point where you can really gauge how people are vibing off it.
You mean these gig or critics?
Just local critics.
No, but they were saying there was like too much of a delay between the tunes because you guys are switching the equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Just a lack of tightness, I guess, at the start.
They want some showbiz, right?
Yeah, some showbiz.
Some showbiz.
But we managed to organically work in a bit of showbiz just by talking some shit and getting more comfortable with that.
Banter.
Yeah, banter.
Some stage banter. Okay. Okay, so, but when Junk Drawer started off, it wasn't like that.
No, very much firmly, I'm on guitar, Brian's on guitar, Rory on bass, Jake on drums. I think we all felt, particularly Jake, that he had some ideas to bring to the table anyway, and I trust his, you know, we all trust each other, because really what we're trying to do is just impress each other with the ideas that we have. So I think it was, the impetus was really on us to let him move forward a bit, so that was just like, yeah. Now, I guess that's a good excuse. Sorry?
When you say bring in ideas, you mean like demos?
Just not so much demos as we all write in different ways. Yeah. I'm more of a, I prefer on the spot, the stream of consciousness thing a bit more. I'll maybe come with a small idea that forms a seed that we all then bounce off. Whereas maybe Jake will, he's more of a methodical writer. And he'll bring, you know, an actual fully fledged chord progression and some, and a, like a bridge idea and things like that. But it always ends up being a very collaborative process in the end.
You're right, though. Everybody's got their own way. Some guys like to write everybody's parts.
Some do. Some do. I don't know what I could do with it.
No, I was involved with a project where the guy, he was the drummer man, too. Interesting. Really? But he would compose all the parts using MIDI.
Yeah.
So it wasn't exactly a bass, but it was a bass part. And then he'd let you, you know, find your own way around it. But it was really interesting where he had realized the whole tune in his mind, but not so butt-tight that nothing could innovate or something. But pretty much a skeleton to hang some bones and muscle, I mean flesh and muscle on.
That's a totally valid way of writing for some people. I know, like, certainly, like, you know, Dinosaur Jr., I think he'll come in even with the drum parts, like Jay will.
I'll give you a technique that's really trippy. When I was helping the Porno for Pyro guys, when Pear teaches his song, there's no talk about time signature, chords, none of that. Verse, chorus, you know, what do you call it? Form. Mm-hmm. Nah, he tells you the story. I remember the title song for that album I was on. He goes, look, Pete, the guitar man, Pete, his daddy's got cancer. And he asks God, hey, you can have my life if you save my pop. And then you're surfing, Mike, and there's a big-ass wave. And you're going to be a hard charger, even with a shark out there. You got it? Okay.
I love that. That's
and then they started playing, you know, and I could see the guitar guy making his hands, so I could see the chords. And then I remember reading something about James Jamerson always getting his bass lines off the singers, and so that I was listening to Pear sing, so that's what I had to go by. And then of course, you know, the stuff that Pear told me about, which I thought was really... But, you know, I mean, everybody's got their own way of making songs, so that's why I...
Totally. It's like the B-part thing. There is something about that. Always feel like you're trying to swim against the current just to keep yourself above... Keep your mouth above the water.
That's a great way of looking at it. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, April 20, 2021. Dish of Watt Pedro Show special guest, Stevie Lennox. Hold tight for our two... April 20, 2021, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Johnny's boat dream. Boat dreams, keep having these boat dreams. I'm just a vessel on the open sea, trying to win a little victory, exploring all the possibilities. Tell my love no matter what that means. Boat dreams, keep having these boat dreams, keep having them. Tell you what that means, or even what it signifies, 'cause we are running out of time. Feelings, I've been having these feelings, I've been having all. I keep having all, 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 I've been having all.
Watt for Pedro Show started off the second hour. Project Stevie's called Unbelievable Lake. And this is a big piece called Forgive. And it's got four parts, and that was part one. Then we had Ben Salter out of Tasmania, something live he did live in Japan called Boat Dreams. And then we had part two of Forgive from Unbelievable Lake. Not Jake. Sorry about that, Stevie. Enlighten us as to Unbelievable Lake Prodge.
All right. I guess the whole thing started with just a couple of guys. We're all from the Mid-Ulster area of Ireland, sort of in the northeast of it. And we all grew up in and around the Sperrin Mountains. And it's a kind of rural area. And we all live in weird old, most of us live in weird old houses, us three guys. We had a lot of just jam sessions, you know, going on for a long time. You know, they go on for half an hour, and it's that thing. I can see it draw a lot of parallels with like places like Arizona, Nevada, and all, where just a bunch of weird stuff happens, amongst a bunch of people that don't have too much outside influence. You know, we early, you know, hearing like Barrett Era Floyd and bands like Om and Sleep, and I think what really solidified the sound that we ended up with was a couple of us went to see, well, I went to see Damo Suzuki in Belfast playing a show and fully improvised with a little bit of form from knowing the guys that played with him. That Illyric music, I think you call it, with some moving parts and a rough set of rules. And then, you know, I started going down a rabbit hole of like Glenn Branca and so on. And a couple of us then went to see Swans in Barcelona a little while after that. And I think straight after it, we just had a chat and realized that that was exactly what we sort of wanted to try and emulate, that be able to take a seed of an idea, even if it's like something that we know can last for about 40 minutes, and feed off a crowd and learn from it and try and create this piece of music that is as much of an idea as anything. Like the Forgive, the recording, all happened in a church near where we grew up, a little rural church, I think from about 1820. And the circumstances were quite weird. We recorded it with a really good friend of ours, Niall. We were very fortunate that the minister, he's a fairly liberal Church of Ireland, like an Anglican minister, was a big fan of, you know, Pink Floyd and King Crimson and Brian Eno and stuff back in the day. So I sort of gave him a few prog notes and he said, have a way, have fun. So we managed to get that place for a couple of days, and the sound of it was incredible. And none of my vocals had been done. There were some there, none really that firm. And then a couple of, it just so happened that a few months later, I was unfortunately burying my granny in that same church. And it sort of it dawned on me when I was sitting having to give a chat to some people. I'm not a religious guy, but being in the same position, I was playing guitar and delivering a sort of part eulogy or reading to some people right from where I was looking at, was quite overwhelming, and I knew I had to reword everything and represent it a little bit. So I did that, recorded vocals, and I suppose that's where we ended up with that album. We're currently working through a second piece. We have a load of different stuff, but unfortunately our drummer's got some issues with his wrist at the minute, and there's going to have to be an operation that might see him have to relearn how to, you know, brush his teeth and do a lot of things. So obviously for a drummer, I mean, it might end up giving us some very interesting percussive ideas in the future, unorthodox approach. I say we'll have another album out before the end of the year. Yeah.
Life deals your hand and you got to play it the best you can.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Now, this name, Unbelievable Lake.
Yeah.
Is there a lake out there by that church?
Not by that church, but we all grew up around the biggest loch in Ireland, Loch Ney. Lake is loch in Irish to some degree. But, yeah, so it's in and around that. And
I think Scots say loch, too.
They do, yeah. They spell it slightly different, much like whiskey. They spell it slightly different.
Yeah, know. But that I found out that's a Brandon issue.
Really?
Yeah, like champagne, right? It's a region northeast of Paris. You got to call it sparkling wine, sherry. You know, it's bourbon, yeah. Right, from Kentucky. There's certain kind of rules. Anyway, I didn't mean...
No, it's all...
To sidetrack. So it's named after the big lake there where you grew up. Okay. Why is it unbelievable? Because it's so fucking big?
Well, I mean, it's 50% that and 50%, yeah, there was always going to be a nature element to anything we presented anyway. I think it's just, we were, probably to come back to what I meant to say earlier, myself and my brother, we grew up in a house that was, it's a couple hundred years old, and it used to be like a small, very, very small doctor's office / hospital. But it's got a lot of history, and we would practice up in this attic, somehow get away with it in the middle of a small village. But the view out of this one window that we had in that attic with all the practice stuff was pretty stunning. And all those guys grew up, you know, playing in their garage that overlooked the mountain, you know, when they opened it up during the summer.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of inflammation, a lot of influence just gets organically taken from all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's a signifier landmark. Okay, let's listen to part 3 or 4.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro's show. That's part 3 of 4. Forgive from an unbelievable lake. Then Justice Yeldon, Brother Lucas in Sydney. Talk squig. I don't know what squig is, but one day I'm going to talk it or learn it. And then finally, part 4 of 4 of Forgive from Unbelievable Lake. And why is it called Forgive?
I think it comes with the, it becomes that acceptance that you get. I mean, without getting too philosophical on it, but there was a lot of time spent up in that period, sort of in between recording the vocals that I talked about and recording the music, and you get a lot of perspective, especially I was coming from Belfast, which is a little bit more hectic, and we're working some more and going back to seeing the way people get on in the countryside, it was a lot more relaxed, and I think it just gave me and my family a really nice chance to let a lot of things slide, and I think that probably is a bit of an underlying sentiment. And as well as that, I think we just agreed that it felt right for the piece. You know, sometimes it's best not to overthink your gut instinct.
Yeah. Don't gild the lily.
Don't gild the lily, precisely.
Or, you know, or do an Oscar Wilde if you're having a sodomy case brought up. Don't protest too strongly. Okay, so it came out of jams, but then, yeah, this attachment with your grandma and just the flow of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of a meditation on life.
Absolutely, and just hearing things like, you know, Scott Walker, particularly the later years, and you're hearing, and Neil Young has it too, just these verses and little snapshots of different periods of history and time. It just had me thinking a lot more in widescreen instead of, like, you know, intensely focused.
And this had to be a new project. Couldn't be Junk Drawer.
No, absolutely not. Different couple of guys, and they totally bring a totally different energy as well.
Right. Yeah, it's all about people, right?
It is, and each thing is a reaction with each other as well. Like, us guys in both bands have known each other for, like, several years, up to, like, maybe a decade before, or our entire lives, in Jake's case, before the band's formed. So there's a language that you build up. You know, you I'm sure you and Deep in the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
A language builds up over time, and then when it comes to musical fruition, there's some seeds there already.
Big time. I can relate. We're at the end of the second hour, April 2021, whatever the fuck it year is. Special guest Stevie Lennox. Hold tight for hour 3. April 20, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
Thank you. It's rare and it's right now.
Watt for Pedro show. Started the third hour. We're back in junk drawer land or world. Mumble Days. And then some stuff from Canada. You Do Right. Presto, Presto, Bella's Dream. That's a song title. Ooh, Boo, Roo, Spirit of the Black Hole. Yeah, it's from Live at Mothland, some Montreal comp. Really great stuff. Pale Angels out of Wales with Halloween. Jamie, big bass man. Eternal Return, The Bottom of the Pond. I was thinking of the Unbelievable Lake. Single Ticket to Hell from Slang out of Hokkaido. And then finally, Junk Drawer with Pile, which is great because that's usually what you find inside the fucking junk drawer is a pile. But you need them, right? Usually one for the kitchen and one for your office room or whatever because it's like the miscellany, right? Stevie, there's something else that people might not know about your music side, a music side of you, is working with films. You mentioned something. Yeah, you did mention something earlier in the show today about you having up the road go do some film thing. But you've been part of some soundtracks, right?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff's on set. And I'm only sort of gradually getting into it. Like, I had a bit of a shift from studying chemical engineering before I realized I needed to work on music into specializing in some film sound. So I've just been working on some projects. I've done occasional little soundtracks, and it's something I'd really love to study more. But I do like on-set sound for like some documentaries, short films, and all the rest. And it's something I really get a lot out of.
Okay. Let me get this straight. On-set sound. So you're not making music. You're capturing other people's like dialogue and other.
Yeah, I do that, and I kind of do some post stuff too, which you know, Foley art and. Capturing some things of my own. I have done some soundtrack work as well, just on low-budget films.
That's okay. What about, like, field? You know, one of the, you know, right, Cabaret Voltaire was three guys, right? But then one guy went off, I think, to join the BBC, and he ended up just doing field records, the Watson guy.
Yeah.
I remember
it's crazy how many of those guys do it. And video guys, so many video guys come from, like, an independent scene here, too.
Okay. I remember the guy's name because Tom Watson, this guy with the same name, plays in my Miss Man. But there's this Cabaret Voltaire album called Mix Up. That's so great. Yeah. Their first album, oh, yeah, is a mind blow. To me, that's what the movement was about, you know. I don't know. It kind of even had dub. It had big bass sounds. And then this guitar sound that was like this dentist drill that constantly 100% of the time was going. It was that band was just so trippy. They ended up doing kind of disco music later, but so you do integrate both. And then there's also a chemical engineering side to you.
That just for a couple of years before I realized I needed to move on to something that my heart was behind because. I could earn some money and do some official stuff for pharmaceutical companies, but this, I knew it after a while that it just wasn't me.
Okay. So I take it then, because I should have asked you earlier if you went to school for music. No, you went to school for chemical engineering. Okay.
I went to school for music technology.
Oh, that too. So you did both. You did both. Okay. That's what – actually, you know, it seems like school – after school, like a university and that stuff, college.
Yeah.
It's about kind of maybe not really knowing what you're doing yet. You're still finding out.
It really was, definitely. Certainly at like 18, I had no idea what I wanted to do with myself. And most people here didn't. And school certainly didn't know what you needed in your life.
Right. And why not, right? I mean, life ain't a rehearsal.
No, God.
This is the go. This is the take. This is the keeper. This is Bukkake, the money shot. But I'm going to play Ego Death in Akron, Ohio. Thank you.
The door when I leave. No heart and gestures. I'll just be on my way. I'm a transient.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Ego Death in Akron, Ohio, Junk Drawer. What's the story behind that?
That one's not my song. Actually, it has a really, we all jammed. Actually, that's one of those rare instances. We have three or four songs in the Junk Drawer back catalog that all happened spontaneously. The full song pretty much emerged fully formed. We were listening to, who was it, like Earth or someone that you can probably pick it up in the tune. But Brian had mentioned that a fella that I knew just in passing had passed away, who worked in a bar. And I just remember, God, I think we were a little bit emotionally charged. I think we'd had a little bit of a smoke. And I just sort of faded down the music and let a drone ring out. And the whole song happened melodically. It all happened within about 10 minutes. Is where it came from, and I think Jake definitely talked about it as more as in a rumination on the idea of going somewhere and not really being able to see what's in front of you.
Like when you're in the bathhouse and the power goes out. Is that you? Don't matter. We had Tim Wholehouse after that with Transient Tales of Lost Soul. We got to thank Tim, right, for some good connect. He's, he wants to play in Pedro. After that, finally, last music, Junk Drawer with how do you pronounce it?
INFJ.
Oh, it's an acronym, right? Okay.
It's an acronym, yeah.
Okay. And what's it stand for?
It stands for, it's a to-do with, there's a thing called the Myers-Briggs personality test, and it divides people up into these categories, 16 categories. It's all very, very loose. It's kind of like astrology for scientists.
Okay.
For psychology students. But it turned out that supposedly the rarest of all the personality types is an INFJ, which is, I think it generally implies intuitive, feeling, introverted, and can't remember what the other J is. You might have to just look that one up. But it turned out that three of the four of us took the little test for a bit of fun, because it was a stupid meme of what personality type are you corresponds to an album, and three out of us got Spirit of Eden by Talk Talk, which we were delighted with, being the correspondent INFJ type. But we thought it was very peculiar that the three of us, even if we do just answer things a certain way or have a certain disposition, ended up forming the band. So it's a convoluted thing, but yeah. Right. And a very millennial thing.
But it's funny, you guys are part of a band. You're not so much man alone.
No, God.
Yeah, right. So where can people find you on the internet, Stevie?
Yeah, you can get us in most of the usual places. For Junk Drawer, it's junkdrawerbelfast, .bandcamp.com, or you can get us on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Spotify.
But there's no Junk Drawer website?
There is actually. There's junkdrawerband.com recently as
okay,
our
okay,
as
that's
Jake
great.
As a coder, so.
That's like recently having your it's like having your own fanzine.
It is, yeah. We right? need to tend to it a little bit
well,
more
you got
and
no,
stop
you,
what focusing I, on the social element.
What I mean is there's like no filter, no gatekeeper. Now you probably got links to all those other places. The telephone poles to hang your flyers on, right? Yeah. And so the next plan for you, music wise, mm-hmm. is More Unbelievable Lake album. Another one.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a couple of Junk Drawer singles too coming up that are getting recorded. Just booked in, actually today, booked some recording time in June. Unbelievable Lake album. We're just getting back to action now that our drummer's recovered.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So these singles for Junk Drawer, they're already written.
Yeah. They're sort of, one is still needs a bit of fine tuning, but yeah, we're getting there. Okay. A little bit tighter than usual, a little bit shorter, but we're really happy with them, I think. We're finally hitting that groove of writing again that sort of was absent through the entirety of 2020.
And where do you record in Belfast?
There's a really nice studio that we're fortunate that some of our friends have residencies in called Start Together. And it's right in the center of town and yeah. somehow doesn't cost a fortune.
What was that place? Auntie.
Oh, Auntie Annie's.
Yeah, Auntie Annie's. Because I played there a couple
yeah.
of times. Is it still going?
Yeah. That was actually the first time I caught your stuff was with the Missing Man.
Right.
For one of Darren's shows.
Okay, Arnie.
I think it's closed down now, and it's kind of like a trad bar. It's been rebranded, sadly, and bought by some gentrifying...
Ah, that shit happens all over the fucking world.
They've named a little quarter of Belfast after the promoter.
I don't want to get bummed out too much, but I had some good memories. I had some great gigs, a couple of great gigs here. It's been bitching to have you on the show, Stevie. When you get done with this other unbelievable lake, please come back on. Let's listen to it and talk about it.
Would love to. Would really love to, Mike.
Okay. People, it's been April 20, 2021 edition. Wap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.